Hold on, I gotta check on Fitzwilliam. He's fine. Fitzwilliam is my daughter's Tamagotchi, and she keeps killing it, and I want to see it evolve all the way. So it's in my pocket, and I have had anxious Tamagotchi dreams for the last 2 nights.
Listen.
This is Your Mom Writes Books.
I'm Caitlin McFarland.
And I am Charlie Ann Holmberg.
And we're back, but just right now. Don't get too excited.
All right. Hey, Caitlin, this looks like a fun thing to talk about. Let's talk about it, but not regularly.
Correct. And we said maybe we'll do one episode a month.
We're really happy to be here for a hot second again, and we want to say thank you so much to all the messages and the people who reached out to say that the podcast has been helpful to them. It makes us feel warm and fuzzy and encourage us to make time to record.
Indeed. Yes, because I know Charlie's, did you finish your edits?
Yeah, I just finished my last round of edits yesterday. I turned them in yesterday.
Yep. So she's been in the midst of that, and I've just been slogging away at my full-time job that I now have, which is not nearly as fun as just making dice bags all day. Definitely preferred making dice bags.
Yeah. Caitlin, how many words a week do you write for your job right now?
20 to 25,000, Charlie.
Gross. So she writes a Charlie-length novel every month.
I write 100,000 words a month on average.
I have one novel that beats that. One that's really close, and then one that I think actually Hanging City is 106 now. It's not 104.
Ooh, I didn't know Hanging City was your longest.
It is. Who knows? Which is so funny because it has like the shortest outline. I don't know what happened, but yeah,
you got into it.
Yeah. By the way, hair flip. Except I don't have any hair to flip. Hanging City was a finalist for the Goodreads Choice Awards in Romanticy. Yeah. Guess who it lost to?
Fourth Wing.
Yeah. no surprise there, but I was super, super happy to be in the top 10 for that category. I have never been nominated for a Goodreads Choice Award before, so that was like my little happy dance of 2023.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, even being nominated, I bet you got a bunch of people reading, so that's really good.
I hope so. So if you're brand new here, I have clout. I have clout now. Listen to what I have to say.
I'm not on TikTok, but I've got clout.
I am not on TikTok, but Caitlin is.
I am.
Actually, Caitlin's posted a few TikToks.
That I did, and then I immediately stopped, and I was like, I don't know what to say.
Well, we'll get you there. We'll get you there.
Well, here's the thing. I actually want to post TikToks, but I feel like all the best TikToks I see are like people in conversation about something, or like people who actually have something to say. And so like, I don't have anything to say. And so I don't post anything. I mostly like silence. And so TikTok and I don't know. Like, I did post a couple of like promotional stuff from things for my book. And I actually have like a bunch of footage and stuff that I took to like make more edits. And then I just simply don't. Because I get really sad when I don't immediately go viral, and I'm like, what's the point? And I posted one video.
It's one of the many downfalls of social media. I was hopping on social media, mostly Instagram, for a hot minute. And then I was like, this is stupid. And I stopped. I mean, I still post on Instagram, but I don't do reels. Rarely ever do I do a reel. I did one like 2.5 weeks ago, because I got a fun typewriter from the Edwardian period. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's great. Anyway, we're here today.
We're here.
To talk to you guys about the Penguin Random House trial.
Scandal.
Many of you guys probably know that they tried to buy Simon and Schuster, and the government stepped in and said, you can't do that. That's a monopoly. We only allow eyeglass companies to do that.
I was going
to
say, if only they would break up literally any other monopoly in this country at the current moment. Wouldn't that be nice?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. But hopefully they're just like dipping their toes. They're like, you know, nobody cares about publishing. Let's start with them. So I will say right up front, and we will have a link to this podcast in our show notes, But this is from the Novel Marketing Podcast with Thomas Umstadt Jr. interviewing Jane Friedman, who runs the Hot Sheet newsletter, which is essentially Hot Goss publishing newsletter, which I only just heard about. And yes, I did just subscribe. So if you want more details and more information on this, I would suggest you hop over and listen to Thomas's podcast. It's an amazing podcast. It's got all kinds of really, really good information. But this episode that we're referring to released on January 2nd, 2024. And it is called Publishing Industry Secrets Revealed at the Penguin Random House Trial.
So we are, this is our secondhand gossip about this gossip.
Yes. This is our commentary because I was listening to it and I was messaging Caitlin just like the really hot bits or the really surprising bits that surprised me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what? Like, while we're going back and forth, we might as well talk about this on the podcast and let everybody know.
It just harkens back to why we originally started this podcast, which was we would just message each other and be like, can you believe? And we're like, we should have a podcast like this.
Yes, exactly.
Anyways.
So it was basically the federal government versus Penguin Random House. And so they asked a lot of questions that went on public record.
Woo.
One of the things they talked about is essentially the monopoly wouldn't affect all authors. It would affect the top 2% of authors. And Jane Friedman specified this as being the 6- and 7-figure authors. So, you know, the big wigs. It is nice to see somebody standing up for authors for once, but the merger would be affecting the advances, essentially, of the big name authors. Not necessarily the mid-listers and the low-listers.
Sorry, won't somebody think of the wealthy?
Right. but they do, and like I've heard this before, and they say this in the podcast as well, that it is those top 1-2% of authors who pay for everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, the reason you get your $50,000 advance on your book is because Stephen King makes so much money. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, and I don't know if this would be the place to say this, but like, this is one of the things we talked about in the chat. And I said, well, maybe if they didn't give $50,000 advances, it wouldn't be so hard for them to support themselves.
Well, if they didn't give these, you know, 6- and 7-figure authors, 6- and 7-figure advances.
Yeah. But like, I mean, do you think, I don't know if we're getting off a little off topic, but, and maybe you don't have a clue, but do you think that they give, like, why don't they just have people, why don't they give smaller advances and get people into earning royalties sooner? Like, so that people that aren't running out, like,
it's interesting. It is interesting because, and this was like at the bottom of my list, but one of the things that came out in this is that most authors do not earn out their advance.
Yes, which is why I'm asking that. I'm not advocating for authors to be paid less. Okay, because this is where my brain is going on this, which I realize I went there alone and not with you. So let me bring you all with me. Authors get paid, you know, advances, and then we have to earn that amount in basically the equivalent amount in what would be our royalties, right, before we are considered to have, like, earned out our advance or, like, yeah, so, yes, right? So far I'm on track mm-hmm. with that. So mm-hmm. you aren't just, you know, when you are an author, it's not like they're buying your book for $50,000 or whatever. It's like they're renting you. No. Well, they're giving you Well, they're giving you $50,000 that they then expect you to basically pay back, like, through what you earn.
I mean, I could see the issue being, though, like, you sell a book in 2020. Mm-hmm. That's a bad year. You sell a book in 2024 and they give you $100,000 advance. That's $100,000 that you are living off of if you don't have a day job until your book comes out, where if they gave you a $10,000 advance, that's not a livable wage.
Yeah.
But, and for better or for worse, most authors have day jobs, you know, because of that.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, nobody's living off their advances anyways, I guess is what I'm saying. I don't know. Maybe I'm probably arguing for the wrong thing. What'd be great is if they would just give us $50,000 and then just immediately start paying us royalties. release.
Yeah, right before the book's release. Yeah. So like for me, I really like the idea of a small advance and royalties because I'm 10 years into this now. And so I have a backlist that I can make money off of while I wait for the new books to generate royalties. But I also have a publisher that will pay me royalties every month instead of every 6 months, which is the industry standard.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, for you, you also earn a higher percentage of your royalty when you take a smaller advance, right? Is that correct?
In my very first contract, something like that was negotiated that I technically can't talk about. Yeah.
Okay.
Though I will say, as an APUB author, I think it's generally known that we do get higher ebook royalties.
Yeah. Well, I'm not under contract with anybody anymore. So listen here. Except for, I guess, technically with you, Charlie. Charlie's my publisher.
I should have put an NDA in there. You're not allowed to talk about your kids.
I would not sign that contract. Well, you don't get to tell me. No, but like, yeah, I guess I'll say, like, I have heard that sometimes if you take a smaller advance, you can get a higher royalty rate. But I don't know if they do that for people anymore. I don't know if that's something that is normal.
I don't know if they do that for the big five. I think you're more likely to get malleability mm-hmm. in small and medium mm-hmm. presses. Which is actually something I want to come back to. But before I get into that, I do want to talk about the other 2%. So there's a 2%, 2%. 2% of authors are affected by this merger. And this is one of the things that really shocked me. They say about 2% of profits from books go into their marketing. Are you serious? Okay, so listen, this is what the standard is for indie. So if you are interested in indie publishing at all, the Facebook group Wide for the Win is a fantastic resource. And a lot of people there will say 20% of your income should go into marketing your book. 20%. Whereas we have these big five publishers who put 2% of profits into book marketing.
Yeah, that's insane. Let me ask you something, Charlie. Do you think if large publishers maybe gave authors smaller advances, maybe even if it was just like $15,000 or $20,000, and then put more money to actually marketing people, that they might see a higher return on their investment?
What? That sounds like crazy talk, Caitlin. You guys ever watch Shark Tank? That's how that works. It's really interesting, and they dig into it a bit. But they talk about, and when I say they, I'm talking about Thomas and Jane, that a lot of publishing has wait and see marketing, which is essentially they put out the book. If the book happens to do well, they look at where it did well, and then they put money into that. Mm-hmm. And so if your book releases and it sells like hotcakes at Costco or something, like you get a table in Costco and you sell and it sells like hotcakes at Costco, they will suddenly pay all the Costco stores to carry your book, you know? Mm-hmm. Or if it does really, really well with Facebook ads, like that probably the author is putting out, they'll put a bunch of money in the Facebook ads, you know, they just wait and see if it takes off on its own or by the efforts of the author, which is unfortunately more and more common that authors have to take care of their own marketing. Mm-hmm. And then that's where they put their money into. And there's really this like old school and new school kind of marketing with publishing. In case you guys don't remember us saying this before, publishing is very, very slow industry to change. They like really only like 15 years ago were like, ebooks are the future, you know? And so there's a lot of authors out there who have like really, really high ebook royalties, if not all their ebook royalties, because they thought that ebooks weren't going to go anywhere because they're just really slow to change. And I know Brandon Sanderson's talked about this publicly, where so many, I think all the big five publishers are in New York because it's prestigious to be in New York, even though it's expensive to be in New York, but that's what publishing does. That's its tradition and it won't change, even if it means saving them tons of money.
It's an industry that is still steeped in like tradition and prestige, even though tradition and prestige are money sucks.
Yeah, they are. And so I want to say it was Jane, but I'm not sure. They touched on how they still use a lot of these old school marketing tactics, even though we're in a new world. And one of the examples they used was Facebook ads. Like, well, if nobody at the marketing in marketing knows how to make Facebook ads. They're not going to make Facebook ads. And I was just floored by that because it's like, but it's their job to know how to make Facebook ads. Mm-hmm. But then there's these other problems too, whereas a lot of these publishers are understaffed. Penguin Random House said that they've had about 24 marketing managers in the last 20 years. That is an enormous, you're more than one a year. That turnover is insanity. The only other time I've heard about that turnover is at my old job in Washington, which also sucked.
Yeah, that's the kind of turnover you expect to see at like a fast food restaurant with a tyrannical manager. Like,
yeah.
If these things are happening, who do you think is the problem? Do you think it's the 24 editors or do you think it's the company that they were working for?
Right. Yeah. And it's like, I don't know how a publishing company works because like I'm an author, you know, and I'm not inside the building where it happens, you know?
Oh, yes, we are. And maybe that's something that we should clear up too. Like most authors just don't have much of a clue how publishing companies actually like run.
Yeah, but that's like one of the problems is that nobody has a clue about how publishing companies really run because there are so many smoke and mirrors and secrets and whatever in publishing that it's really hard to know anything that's happening. That's why having Penguin Random House on public trial is so fascinating because they have to answer these questions under oath and you get to learn about stuff that you didn't know before.
Yeah, just saying that now, it was like, wait, I should know. We should know. But you're right, it is smoke and mirrors, because it's not like we don't want to, because they're our livelihoods, right? But like, I mean, aside from the fact that most of them just treat authors like disposable commodities, yeah, why would they tell us? They find most of us replaceable.
The publishing industry is two halves, and there's this big red tape in between the halves of the contractors, which are the authors, mm-hmm. and the halves of the people who actually work in publishing. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a big exodus. I'm sorry, I'm not informed. There was a big exodus from publishing, or maybe a specific publisher, a year or two ago. Remember, like, all the interns were leaving and stuff?
Yeah, I probably don't know enough to speak on either. I thought it was like across, but I don't know if it was just one specific one.
There's like all it's funny how secretive they are because it doesn't seem like an industry that should need to be secretive.
I don't think so either. Part of me is like, if you think about publishing, it has to be one of the oldest still running industries in the country, right? Because yeah.
Since 1500s.
Yeah, like it's been around for hundreds of years and it's one of the only modern things that we still really do that's been around for hundreds of years, right? Like, And so I do wonder if that's part of it. And I really, lately more and more, I don't know.
I wonder if it's, you know, how some jobs will tell their employees you can't discuss your salaries with your coworkers because they don't want Jane to know that she doesn't make as much as Joe, or Jane can then demand more money. And I wonder if that has something to do with it. But then again, in Publishers Marketplace, they have the whole code and they have like a key for this code. And I'd have to go look it up, but it's like, good deal is, you know, $10,000 to $49,000. Great deal is $50,000 to $99,000. Fantastic deal is $100,000, you know, and they will say, oh, she got a good deal or she got a fantastic deal. And then you can know the range of what the advance was.
Well, and authors pretty openly talk about their advances. Like, if you want to know what an author's advance was, you can almost always find it, I feel like.
Yeah. Though I will say, I mean, at least in my very first contract, it actually says that not allowed to discuss it.
But that's Amazon, right? Because Amazon is different. Amazon runs differently from these publishers.
That's true. So I wonder if there are any clauses like that in the big five.
Well, and usually you'll hear things thrown around, I guess, like six-figure deal or whatever, you know, like, yes. Like upper five figures, six figures, whatever.
It's like, I want you to know how much money they made, but I'm going to act like I'm being secretive about it. It's like humble bragging.
Yeah, but they're not. I mean, I guess that kind of brings me back around to this idea of advances. And do they do that so that they can kind of like brag about how much they're paying their authors? Like, is that why the advances are so high when like so few people earn out?
I mean, if it gets out, oh, this was a six-figure deal, more people will be interested in the book because they want to see, yeah. Well, what book got that much money? So maybe it's a marketing tactic.
That is also really, really true. And I do just have to reiterate in case anybody ever takes these words out of my words out of context. I do not want authors to be paid less.
Yes.
And I would have to acknowledge that there is much greater risk to an author not making money if you had a lower advance and a higher royalty, even if you had a higher royalty rate, because you never know how many books you're going to sell. So I will, yeah. I will say that, just, I don't want people to be like, she wants authors not to get paid, which is literally the opposite of how I feel. I just think that the whole system is weird.
I know. I was just thinking, like, how weird would it be if we were paid hourly?
Oh, like nobody could afford to do that.
So you said it depends on how many books they sell. So this was probably the most surprising thing that came out of this podcast. Mm-hmm. Was, if you want to hear more details about it, again, I recommend that you head over to Novel Marketing Podcast and listen to them.
Yeah, they did their research. We are once again wildly speculating, as we do.
But they said something about how 20% of authors only sell 12 books. And then did not expound on it. It's like, what? I'm like, there's no way.
Yeah.
There's, like, if it was indie authors, I would believe that 20% of indie authors would only sell 12 books, because a lot of people publish without marketing or knowing what they're getting into.
I bet that's more like 80% of indie publishers selling, yeah, 12 books.
But so this, apparently this number dropped. And a lot of people were talking about it. And so somebody from BookScan finally stepped up, because BookScan has most of the numbers. They don't have all of the numbers, but they have a lot of them. And they said something about it being more like 19%.
That's
and it's like, what?
This so doesn't make it better.
Can you imagine, like, you have, and like, is this Big Five, or is this, I don't know if it's Big Five or it's overall publishing houses. Can you imagine having a big contract and everything, and then you only sell 12 books?
Well, this is, and that's why I'm like, that's why I think everyone's so aghast at the numbers. And that's why I still feel like there must be some qualifier that we do not know. Because
I think so too. Because, like, a lot of people will, like, have their whole career and they only sell 300 books, and that sucks, but 12?
Yeah. Because the thing is, if a publisher is going to invest, because even if, mm-hmm. okay, so there are, we know that there are some, like, digital first imprints, like the one that I had when I was traditionally published, that, yes, do not offer advances. Like, I've never gotten an advance.
Yeah.
I'm closer to getting an advance now that I work for a paycheck than I was, mm-hmm. actually publishing books. But so they don't offer advances or whatever, but they still have to invest in your covers. They still have to invest in your editing. They're paying people to do that. And so you have to imagine that they are sinking, I mean, a minimum of a few thousand dollars into every book that they make, right?
Yeah.
And if your book only sells 12 copies, you just made $12.
And so here's the thing too, like, to give you guys some numbers. So, like Caitlin mentioned earlier, my company Pegasus republished her Dragonsworn series, mm-hmm. which is now available on Kindle Unlimited if you want to go check it out.
Read my pages.
But to average it out, one of those books, we probably paid $2,500 to $3,500 to publish one book. Mm-hmm. 12 books is like, if assuming they're all paperbacks, I might make $72 off of 12 books.
Yeah.
So not doing anything to push or market those books, you're losing so much money. And that's why that number is just, like, for Carina Press, that didn't do an advance, mm-hmm. it makes more sense that that might happen, mm-hmm. because they're not losing money, mm-hmm. but they still paid editors. They still...
Yeah. Well, and let me ask you something, Charlie. Compared to the cost of the initial publication cost of a book, say you just do editing and cover, because, like, you know, that's pretty much what a book needs, right? Mm-hmm. How much... compared to that, do you think you'd have to put into marketing to, like, earn back what you put into it? You know what I mean? Like, well, because you can easily spend just as much on you can literally spend as much money on marketing as you want, right?
Yes.
And the more you spend, the bigger, like, your return is usually with marketing.
Yeah, assuming you know how to market appropriately.
Yes. And so, like, I mean, is it just not worth it to them to market it? Because they're like, we're not even going to put a couple of $100 into marketing this, or $1,000 more into marketing this. Like, we're just going to see if it sinks or swims by itself.
I have no idea. It's like, oh, was this book left at the wayside for another book? But if it's 1/5 of books coming out, how is that happening that often?
Yeah. And that just brings me back to, like, there's got to be something.
It's got to be nuanced.
Yeah.
Because, like, you go tell all your family members and to get buy a book. Like, you're going to sell more than 12 copies.
Yeah, that's what I don't get. I'm like, of course, though, with a company like Karina and any, kind of mass market paperback company, Karina had subscribers, right? Or, like, it would send out, like, it would pick books. And, like, you could get – that's how I got paperbacks initially was, like, I was sent out to people who subscribe to, I think, Harlequin. Mm-hmm. And that's why I had those initial print runs of my books. Otherwise, I just would have been digital. Yeah. So then you have guaranteed sales, and then you get – you know, you hopefully auto-generate word of mouth from that. But I don't know. Like, why would you just put $2,000 to $3,000 or, you know, up to $4,000 or $5,000 into a book and then just be like, we're just going to see what it does now? And you just – you just let it be free and then you never touch it again. Like, yeah. You would have to do that to only sell 12 copies of a book.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish we had more information on that. I wish I bet there's somewhere I can get like all the pages from the trial, but that would require effort and me reading a lot, and I don't have time for that. So wild speculation.
Somebody tell us.
Another thing mentioned was that most book sales actually happen outside the five big publishers, because one of the reasons being that it's not expensive to start a publishing press.
Yes.
So I thought that was interesting, because we always like the big five, but they don't have the market share. Even all lumped together, they don't have the market share, but I think they just have the ability to market more than other presses do.
Right. Well, and so when you say like it doesn't cost a lot of money to start a press, like what do you need to do to start a press? Just decide you're a press.
Pay a CPA to register you as a business, and there you go.
Perfect.
I mean, technically, you know, I mean, if I wanted to start a press and I wanted to be as cheap as possible, you know, I'd get the business license, which is not that much money. Mm-hmm. I get the business license and I'd get registered like as an LLC or whatever. And then I would get my friend's books or whatever and have, you know, somebody read them for cheap on the cheaper for free. I actually know. I won't. Oh, that's Fitzwilliam. What do you need, Fitzwilliam?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, is he? Hold on. He might need to be disciplined because he doesn't have any poop on the screen. Why are you whining at me? He does need to be disciplined. He's not going to like it. See? But I actually know of a small press where it was discovered, I won't name names, that the person in charge was giving books to their teenage son to copy edit. Oh
gosh.
So it does happen, guys. You know, and then I would AI art a cover.
Well, and we will say, look, we are firmly against that.
We are, which is why it's funny. We are against it. We've all, you know, seen the covers where somebody's friend drew them a picture or something, and that person is not experienced in graphic design.
Well,
you know, so I used to get a really cheap cover.
Do you know what I did too? Because, like, okay, I'm trying to get my short stories like up on my website. Do you know what I did? I just have a subscription to Canva Pro.
Yeah, well, and there's a thing too. So I'm like, oh, wait, it depends on the genre. Because if I'm publishing sweet romance, it's way easier to go to deposit photos and get a picture and then find a nice fancy font to put on it. Like, I can get that for like $10.
Yeah.
And I could make a decent looking cover.
Yeah. There are so many, like Canva and like Procreate. And like,
sorry, guys, my brain always goes fantasy. I always just think about fantasy books.
Fantasy's all that matters. Haha. Just kidding. But yeah, like, there are so many ways to make a decent looking cover that really are not that hard. Like, you don't need to resort to AI.
Yeah.
There are so many tools and they're not expensive. Just get Canva Pro for 1 month, $13. You can do it.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, if I really want to, I could, and it doesn't cost anything to put your book up on Amazon because Amazon just takes a chunk of your book.
Right.
And so assuming that I'm going on Amazon and I'm not going wide, I mean, I could publish a book for $50.
Yeah. Well, and you would need formatting software, but I just got Atticus for like $150. So theoretically, and especially if you were going to do the editing or something, theoretically, you could probably get a book up online for like $200 up front or less.
Yeah. Now, this is saying like how easy is it to start a publishing press. That's how easy it can be. It doesn't mean that this press is going to put out good material.
No. This is unsuccessful. We've just failed. Our business has just failed.
Yes. you know, just as an example, it's not expensive to start a publishing press. You know, not like, you know, like you, again, let's talk about Shark Tank some more. You know, these entrepreneurs who go on Shark Tank, and a lot of times they're asked how much of their own money goes into it. And it's like 10, 20, 100, $200,000 has to go into the business just to make their prototypes and stuff. But you don't really have to do that in a publishing press. You don't even have to have a physical item if you just want to do digital only. But even then, you just go to Ingram and they'll print it for you.
Yeah. And in publishing, it is one of those things where if you want to be somebody who writes, like, you can either, if you want to self-publish, like, you can invest money or you can invest time. And that's, you know, true for a lot of things. If you're willing to invest the time, you can save a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. The only thing I have left on my list of the audacity that I was thinking of while listening to this was the fact, this rang true to me. This wasn't like a surprise, but that the big five don't compete with prices, whereas indies do. And we all like will be like reading the sample of a book, or we get something from the library and we go check out the ebook online. And it's either going to be like, if it's indie sale, it's like 99 cents. If it's indie full price, it's $5. And if it's from one of the big five, it's $17.99.
Yeah.
You know, like, and the ebooks are priced like paperbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes hardcovers. A lot of times I have seen the ebooks be more expensive than the paperback and hardcover.
Yeah, which is, let us just say, really stupid.
It is. And it's like, do you guys not want to sell? Like, I think it must be them just wanting to push physical books for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think so.
But listen, if I want to read, you know, a monster romance and I'm getting on Amazon, it's like, oh, I could get this one from big publisher number one for $17. Or I could get this one from indie author number one for $4.99.
Right.
Huh, which one am I going to get?
Right. And that's the thing, too, is like when you're – this is why I'm like, publishing has got to just – it's got to just crumble at some point, because it's competing with, first of all, it's competing with like fan fiction and like Wattpad, which are free, right? Which we know is just wildly popular. I would argue still growing in popularity. My children read fan fiction and all that stuff, right? And write it. So it's not like it's going away. So there's that stuff that is free. And then they're competing with like apps, right? Like the one that I work for, you can technically get on the app that I work for and read for free to a certain extent. And then you're going to have to start putting money in, and then you're going to have to start, or you're going to have to like watch ads or something. Right. And like the secret funny thing is if you read on an app like that, you're going to end up spending like magnitudes of money more than if you had just went and bought a book, just so you know.
Yes. So much. I wanted to read one of Caitlin's books. And this was on, because you're technically, she's on a different app now. This was when I was working
for the Choose Your Own Adventure app that you like had to buy like in-app currency to pay to make the good choices.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And it's expensive. Mm-hmm. Like you get a price cut the more you buy, but not by that much. And I think I spent like $25 just to get like probably a quarter of the way through the book. And after that, I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I just bought a hardcover and I'd stopped reading. Because then, like, you have to only choose the bad ones and the book ends.
No, the book doesn't end. You get to the end of the book no matter what. You can still get a happy ending. You can still get a happy ending no matter what. But you can't get, like, you won't have the experience that you want to have. Right.
That's what you need to do, Big Five. You need to have more Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Jeez, don't tell them that. They'll do it. No, the app I work for now, I feel like, is better. You just pay to unlock chapters as you go, and you do probably end up paying about the same amount as you would for like a trade paperback, but that's for like about 100,000 words, I think. So,
have you noticed how much book prices have gone up though?
Nope, have not been paying attention.
Man, like my hardcovers, and I always thought this was really expensive. My hardcovers used to be like $24.95, and they're like $29.95 now.
I love books. I have always loved books. I am not going to pay $30 for a hardcover. I'm simply not. The last time I was paying...
If I really wanted the book, I might.
Maybe, but the last time I was paying for hardcovers, I was paying like $22. So maybe that'll tell you how long ago it's been that I was buying books.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like hardcovers were $20 to $25, and now it seems like they're $25 to $30. Or like that book that Nathan... was telling us about in the horror episode, House of Leaves or something.
House of Leaves, yeah. Uh-huh.
It's like $40 for the paper bag.
Oh, they probably have to print that one special.
For the formatting. Yeah. And you know what? That's true. It is because of the formatting. Mm-hmm. It's really small text. I was mad about that. But it does have a lot of really special formatting in it. What is that called when you have a colored ink in a book?
I can't remember.
Drop color or something like that. I don't remember. Yeah. But just to get one thing in a book, like one extra color in a book, is really expensive. The reason that the Sanderson Kickstarter books got some drop color, that's not what it's called, and then spot coloring, uh-huh. I think, is because the Kickstarter did so well that they're like, oh, well, let's give them something extra. But yeah, I just think that, and you know, what's interesting, talking about these prices and talking about competition and such, mm-hmm. one of the things that's getting really talked about on the indie side of things is direct to consumer. Mm-hmm. More and more indies are trying to pull away from Amazon especially, but even from other wide places like Kobo, mm-hmm. and sell their books directly to consumer from their website. That's on the rise right now. And so it'll be interesting to see how that affects publishing.
Yes. And I will say too, that is not just in writing. Like, that is a lot of people who do sort of more cottage business, which I would almost consider indie writing sort of like a cottage business, because you're just sitting there making it kind of by yourself. Very mm-hmm. similar to what I do when I sew dice bags. Because, you know, I used to be on Etsy, and then Etsy just started taking more and more and more and more from every sale, mm-hmm. to the point where I wouldn't have been making a profit at all. And I'm like, I'm not here to make you guys money. I'm here to, like, feed my family and stuff. So, mm-hmm. so I am no longer on Etsy, right? But I do have my website. And so that's happening across industries. And I think it's just, like, this trend where we've just seen like big companies just decide to become like money suckers in the last like 5-ish mm-hmm. years. Like, I mean, it's been building up this whole time, but really since COVID, it's been like, man.
Yeah. Because everybody had to pivot to online sales yeah. during COVID. And so that's kind of started to become the norm.
But online sales for a lot of, like, going back to ebooks, it means they don't have to warehouse them. They don't have to print them. It is saving them money. It means they can produce infinite books for $0. And they're trying to not do that? For why? Like, have you met people who are under the age of 25? They're not going back to paper books. Like, I know that that 5-10 years ago or whatever, it was like, well, teenagers prefer paper, like they prefer physical books and stuff. Maybe that was true of like Gen Z kids, but like my little Gen Alpha monsters, very tail end of Gen Z kids, everything's on their phone.
Yeah.
Everything. And those kids are not going to prefer physical copies of books. So I don't know. It's just, anyways, but yeah, no, it's just like, everything has gotten more expensive, and it all seems to be like they're trying to draw all the money up to the top, because like they're trying to, by like squeezing everybody at the very bottom. So I can see why people would be moving to direct to consumer, because it's the only way to stop. It's the only way to make a profit, you know, mm-hmm. until then you're going to get like Shopify and stuff taking all their fees out. It's going to be special.
Well, there's also this whole thing, you know, I think we've talked about this before. In like a marketing episode, not that we do a lot of those, but we've talked about how your newsletter is your number one marketing tool because you control it. Like, even if you're on MailChimp and MailChimp goes down, like, you own those email addresses and you can move it somewhere else. Whereas if you're big on Instagram or you're big on TikTok, and you know, Instagram's like, oh, you, for whatever reason, you've broken our terms of services, we're going to delete your account. Everything yeah. is gone. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think it's kind of similar with Amazon. And listen, I know not everybody loves Amazon. I do. Amazon pays my bills. Mm-hmm. But on the indie side of things, a lot of people will just have their stuff taken down. Like, I've heard a lot of stories about authors who have their books pirated, who are in Kindle Unlimited. If you're in Kindle Unlimited, you have to be exclusive mm-hmm. to Amazon. But then pirates come in, pirate their books, and post them other places. And then Amazon will take down the author's book because they're not following terms of service, which is awful. Because it's usually a bot that's doing it too. It's usually not yeah. a human. But if it's direct to consumer, No one, you own that website. You own those that merchandise. Nobody can take it away from you.
And I will say this too. Direct to consumer is better for the consumer. Because if Amazon decides that they aren't going to carry something anymore, they can just take it away. Like if Amazon decides, like if you pay for movies on Amazon Prime, if you paid for a movie and Amazon decides, or like their contract with that company gets revoked or canceled or what, I don't know what contracts do, you can just lose that. Like this actually happened recently. Something was taken off, I want to say like PlayStation or something like that, that people had paid for, and they're just like, sorry, this is expiring. It doesn't matter if you put money into it. And so I don't know if that applies to ebooks and stuff or not, like how it would work if you have a Kindle. You'd have to have a Kindle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But like
if the book is downloaded and they took it off Amazon, I believe it would stay on
it would stay Kindle. On your Kindle.
But it wouldn't be in, I don't know if it would be in your cloud.
Yeah. So then you have to have that Kindle, and as soon as that Kindle is dead, that book is gone. But if you're direct to consumer,
I don't know.
If you're direct to consumer, if you buy an ebook from me and you have it on your computer, you have whatever, it's an EPUB or whatever, yeah, you have it for, I can't take it away from you.
I was thinking about that too, just like going back to the pirating thing, because pirating is a really big deal. A lot of people think it's not, but it is a really big deal. I actually know that there are book clubs that read, like they run off of pirated books. It's like, go to the library, please.
Yeah, just go to the dang library if you can.
I do wonder, this is just off topic, this is just a thought. Like when you do sell ebooks direct to consumer, like how do you protect against you piracy? Like I don't you know can't. How that stuff
and like
works.
I will say, I don't know anything about it. I will say this. My Korean Press didn't even bother to try and like encrypt their books or anything. They didn't even bother. Mm-hmm. Because they're like, it doesn't matter. Like they just get it anyways.
Does Atticus have something on it for encryption?
I don't know, because I don't know if you can encrypt EPUBs. Like Amazon is the entity that encrypts Kindle book files, I think. It's not something that the author does before uploading. It's something Amazon does.
I don't know. If you guys are a tech whiz in the publishing industry, send us an email at yourmomwritesbooks@gmail.com.
Tell us how wrong we've been about everything we've said this episode, and our next episode will just be us reading about that.
We'll be like, it's not called encryption, it's called encryption.
You're wrong about everything.
Think about speculation, more speculation. How crazy would it be if one of the big five, pick one, just pick one for me.
Oh no. My mind went blank.
Can we even name all the big five?
Penguin, Random House.
I had to think about it for a minute. Okay, let's do Macmillan, okay? Let's just take Macmillan.
I would have forgotten Macmillan.
I know. I'm like, Scholastic.
Scholastic is not one of the big five.
No, they're not, but I feel like they should be. Anyway, so Macmillan. Let's say that Macmillan, I don't know who's in charge of Macmillan, but let's say they had a fever dream and they're all of a sudden like, you know what? We're changing everything. And they just like rework their entire publisher instead of being in line with all the other publishers. And they said, we're going to do this. We're going to do these things that the indies do. We're going to start bundling stuff like Sanderson does. We're going to do all this stuff. And 5 years later, how would they stand against the other big four? Like how much of a difference would that make? For better or for worse, you know, and like if they did it and it worked, others would start doing it too, I'm sure.
Yeah, and that's the thing. But like, this is where I think you have smaller presses and like presses that, like, and we used to say small press, we don't necessarily mean like five guys in a basement, right? Like,
yes.
Like, you can look at Red Tower, that is a publisher for Fourth Wing. What they did with their viral marketing campaign for Fourth Wing obviously worked. And they, you know, and they were marketing it in a way that was very effective and just so different, and like they put marketing into it, and like, oh, what was I gonna say? And the other thing about Fourth Wing too, which is something that stands to be said, and I do feel like people should know this, Fourth Wing is an IP. The publisher came up with it, and then Rebecca Yarros just wrote it. And honestly, I feel like if more authors knew that, they would despair less.
Yeah, they mentioned that on a Publishing Rodeo podcast, which if you guys haven't listened to that one, I really recommend it.
Yeah.
But apparently it was an IP book.
Which means that Fourth Wing was come up with by like the marketing team or something, right? Like the whole concept for mm-hmm. it, whatever, was come up with by a group of people who were like, this will sell this. And I don't know where the concept that they came up with ends and where what Rebecca Yarros did begins. I don't know what they gave her.
Yes.
But like, she didn't come up with that. That was a marketing strategy, and it super, super worked. That goes into a whole other rant that I have about like the commodification of art and how like everything's a marketing thing these days and nothing is organically produced anymore. But you know, we don't have to talk about that. That'll be another episode. But if you feel like, oh, here's what I want to know from our people, let us know. I want to know if anybody else feels like things just aren't hitting like they used to anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm having so much trouble. I've been going back to reading old books. I think this is something we talked about before we stopped podcasting. Like, I've been reading older books. I've been going back to like other stuff because like new stuff just isn't hitting like old stuff did. And like,
I feel the same way. And I, maybe it's because we're crotchety now.
Yeah, maybe we're just old.
We're not, and we're not trying to say all you got, your guys' books suck now. We're not trying to say that at all. But
I think that, well, it always used to be such a thing to be like, well, don't write to trend, write the book of your heart. And like, yeah, you had a lot more, probably had a lot more flops, but you also had a lot more like genuine stuff out there. And now it's like everybody is trying to do, they're writing a very specific
right to market.
Yeah, they're trying to write to market.
Yeah, because authors need to make money because publishers don't pay them enough.
yes correct. I don't know, it's such a thing, you guys. And to me too, this kind of goes then back to that, like, books that only sell 12 copies, who picked that up? Fire that person. Who signed the book that only sells 12 copies? Maybe like, it's almost like you want them to be more discerning, but then at the same time, you want them to be, take more risk with like the kinds of stories. Like, I have so many contrasting like wants from publishing right now.
Yeah.
Gosh.
The Novel Marketing Podcast with Thomas Umstadt Jr. interviewing Jane Friedman from The Hot Sheet, which is titled Publishing Industry Secrets Revealed at the Penguin Random House Trial from January 2nd, 2024, does go more into this. They talk a lot more, like there's some stuff with Barnes & Noble and some other interesting things in there. So I really do recommend that you go listen to that episode. But I don't want to go, I'm like, oh, I can bring this up. It's like, no, I don't want to just like regurgitate their stuff. So go listen to them.
The thing is, like, we're commenting on it.
We are commentators on the sport of writing podcasts.
We are here to speculate wildly once again, and we've succeeded.
That should be our whole. Are we on season 5? 4?
4, I think. Season 4. I think 4.
Maybe. 4. Yeah. I don't know. Like, every episode, we should just be commenting on somebody else's podcast. Guys, we don't want to come up with our own stuff. No. So now we're going to do this one.
Wait, wasn't our season 3, like, a thing, like, saltier than ever? And
saltier than ever.
Season 4 is just going to be speculating wildly. That's just
speculating wildly.
If we do our, like,
we're Mustangs that cannot be tamed.
Oh boy.
Sorry. I'm so sorry I did that.
Well, they've missed you, Charlie, so it's okay.
You know what that just was?
What?
It was a penguin random horse.
No!
I was just like, oh, I have to come up with a pun. And I just looked down at that name and I was like, got it.
You know. Well, that means we have to end because Charlie did the pun.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate, review, and whatever. I haven't done this for a hot second.
Subscribe
that. We update on Tuesdays sometimes. You can also email us at yourmomwritesbooks@gmail.com.
Uh-huh. And also tell your friends, like, if you like this podcast, and you know, we have older episodes that have useful stuff in them. you know, tell your friends, because that really, like, word of mouth is really the best way to get, like, known or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, it really, no, it's the best marketing is word of mouth, and it's something you can't pay for.
Yeah.
But you can beg for it.
Help us, please. We'll give you more episodes.
Caitlin, where can people find you?
In the woods.
She's still in the woods, guys. Yeah. She's never leaving.
Never leaving. No. I am at The Witch of the Weald, WEALD on Instagram, and I am at Witch of the Weald, Notha on TikTok. I posted something like 7 TikToks, and I think the last time I did was like a month ago. You can go watch those if you want to.
Go get on her TikToks and just comment more TikToks, more TikToks, more TikToks. Like, Caitlin does very well with peer pressure, guys.
You mean I crumble instantly?
Crumble instantly. But she does even better if you pay her.
No, I mean, if there's anything you want to make me, if you want me to make a TikTok about, like, you can let me know.
Yeah, because I won't do it because I won't get on TikTok.
Charlie won't get on TikTok, but I'm addicted to it very thoroughly. That's pretty much where you can find me. I have my website still, witchoftheweald.com.
I'm Charlene Holmberg. You can find me mostly on Facebook and on Instagram at CN Holmberg. If you really want to find me on X, where I post once every 6 months, I'm also at CN Holmberg there. It's weird to call it X on
yeah,
X
it's Twitter.
Twitter.
I technically still have one, but I deleted the app off my phone because I refuse to sign back in even to see hot gossip these days because it's too stupid.
Yeah, I keep it for hot gossip. No, I keep it because, like, I do have some followers there, and whenever I have, like, a cover or something, I post it. Like, I'm an updates-only account there, and I'm happy with that. You can find me online at charlieandholmberg.com, and by the time this releases, my fancy new website might be up, or it might almost be up. So it's going to be really pretty. If it's not up, go check it out now, and then check it back in a week or two, and then see how much it changed. My next book is Boy of Chaotic Making, and it is releasing February, like September, nope, February 13th of this year, and we are having a release party for it on the 15th at the LTUE conference in Provo, Utah. So if you guys want to go to that conference, it's a pretty good writing conference, especially for beginners. And come say hi. That'd be cool. Mm-hmm. My publisher gave me a Kindle to give away.
Ooh.
So that's also cool. And then I have another one coming out on September 3rd, and it's called Still the Sun, and it has a really pretty pink cover on it that has the same illustrator as Leigh Bardugo. So that means I'm cool now.
Yeah, it does. And the thing that I forgot to say was that you can buy the Dragonsworn trilogy on Amazon.
Yes, you can. It benefits both of us.
Yes, help me and Charlie out by buying my books.
Tell them the titles. Tell them what the first
Soul
one is.
Soul of Smoke, Shadow of Flame, and Truth of Embers. And I have the same covered artist as Carissa Broadbent of Serpent in the Wings of Night fame, I believe.
Yeah. She has been hot cakes lately. Mm-hmm. I have a sample of her book on my Kindle right now. Mm-hmm. She was also a finalist in the Romantasy category for Goodreads. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited to dive into that. I think it was her. She hit the Wall Street Journal bestseller list, and somebody who follows her saw my name on it lower. And they sent it to me, and that's how I found out that my last book hit. Was from a Carissa Broadbent post. I was like, great.
Amazing.
I know, so great. If you guys want hardcovers of her book that have a sticker of her signature in it, you can get them at my website.
Oh, my book, not Carissa Broadbent's. Mine.
You get that in my shop, but are you selling them in your shop yet, Caitlin, or are you been a selector?
They have not been posted yet.
Guys, go to comment on Caitlin's TikTok and tell her to put her books up. It's only been like 6 months.
Yeah. They're still there, but I like having them at my house because then I can look at them. Yep. Buy my books. They're also, are they on Kindle? Is it KDP? What are they on?
They're Kindle Unlimited.
Kindle Unlimited. Thank you guys so much for listening. Hopefully it won't be too long until we see you again. Bye.
Bye.